far. And the spacecraft camera, the command module camera, is still...
2 degree, dead man, plus minus 5.
They're giving each other some information on tracking. This is coming from readouts of the computer mechanism, their onboard navigation instruments. The ground has copied the weights of the two spacecraft.
Houston, go ahead.
Okay, LEM weight is 5334. And CFM weight is 35600.
The command module weighs a lot more, 35,000 pounds to some 5,000 pounds of the Intrepid, the lunar module, the top stage. The command module still has a lot of fuel in it in that service module portion to bring the men home.
Could you copy?
Question to Clipper, did he copy that?
5,500 into the LEM, is that close enough?
One of the antennas from one of the two spacecraft is not locked on solidly to Earth. It is quite possible that the Intrepid dish antenna is blocked from clear view of the Earth by the spacecraft, by the Yankee Clipper craft. We've had some difficulty with the Intrepid transmission since Pete Conrad performed his roll maneuver. Possibly that noise is coming from that one of the locks, the antenna locks on Earth being improper. Or somewhat weak. We can see Conrad's face through the window.
Plus or minus 5 degrees.
He says he has some sunglasses on inside the helmet. A little bright vertical white streak, which Jerry Carr in Mission Control presumed to be Pete's nose. Pete says it's his sunglasses.
Clipper, Houston, go.
I expect the folks are a little bored of that scene. I'll turn the television off with your concurrence.
Gordon is asking to turn the TV off. Mission Control concurs, so we're about to lose the TV picture. How's the show? Gordon asks, how was the TV transmission? Mission Control says, very good. There goes the television. That was the color camera on board the Yankee Clipper.
Apollo Control, Houston. Television transmission is down now. We copied a preliminary docking time of 145 hours, uh, 36 minutes, and you heard Pete Conrad commend command module pilot Dick Gordon for what he described as a super job. We're at 145 hours, uh, 42 minutes, and this is Apollo Control, Houston.
The spaceship Yankee Clipper, the command module Yankee Clipper, and the lunar module Intrepid have now been docked for 7 minutes. Pete Conrad and Al Bean have returned from the moon to the mothership. We'll report more from Houston and from the moon in a few moments.
And a successful climax of this latest part of the flight plan for Apollo 12, the docking at 17 hours 58 Greenwich Mean Time. The Voice of America's continuous live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. That coverage continues following this summary of Late World News.
Apollo 12's moon explorers, Commanders Charles Conrad and Alan Bean, have now docked their lunar module with the command ship. Conrad and Bean, the third and fourth men to walk on the moon, guided their landing module Intrepid through a complex series of rocket firings to catch up with Richard Gordon, their colleague in the command vessel, Yankee Clipper. The link-up climaxed a busy day in which astronauts Conrad and Bean trekked across the lunar wasteland, carefully collecting rock samples. They also retrieved part of the unmanned surveyor craft, which landed on the moon 2.5 years ago, and they set up the first scientific observatory to return data to the Earth for at least a year. President Nixon has accepted the resignation of Ambassador Henry Cabot Lodge as chief of the U.S. delegation to the Paris talks on Vietnam. The resignation is effective December 8th. The White House said no replacement has been selected. Until a successor is named, A presidential spokesman said the U.S. delegation will be headed by Philip Habib, who has served as Ambassador Lodge's senior advisor. The United States and the Soviet Union held their second working session of the strategic arms limitation talks in Helsinki, this time at the Soviet embassy. It was announced only that the negotiators will meet again next Monday at the American embassy. Last night, the two delegations got together at a reception jointly sponsored by the American and Soviet embassies. About 80 Finnish guests, including President Urho Kekkonen, attended. Japanese Prime Minister Sato and President Nixon are discussing economic matters at their second round of talks now underway at the White House. The talks yesterday concerned the return of Okinawa to Japan and Asian matters. A joint communique is scheduled to be issued Friday. A Nigerian airliner crashed and burned near Lagos on a flight from London, with the loss of all passengers and crew. VOA correspondent Frederick Brown reports from Lagos that airline officials say there were 75 passengers and 12 crewmen aboard. The French news agency reports that the youths who hijacked a Polish airliner to Vienna earlier today were two 20-year-old Poles. According to the report, the plane was flying from Wrocław to Warsaw with 16 passengers and four crew members aboard when the hijackers terrorized its pilot with toy pistols and fake bombs. In Belgrade, the spokesman for the Yugoslav Foreign Ministry announced agreement, in principle, on resumption of full-fledged diplomatic relations between Yugoslavia and Communist China. For the past 11 years, the two countries have been represented at each other's capitals by chargé d'affaires. That's the news. Jack Moyles reporting.
The Voice of America, broadcasting from the VOA Apollo News Center in Washington, from the Manned Spacecraft Center at Houston, Texas, with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. Just about 10 minutes ago, we had the successful redocking of the lunar lander Intrepid with the mothership Yankee Clipper, a maneuver that began some 3.5 hours before with a very successful liftoff from the surface of the moon from the Sea of Storms at 14 hours 25 Greenwich Mean Time. Then over the intervening 3.5 hours, the ever-changing of the orbit, the orbital mechanics, bringing the Intrepid up to the Yankee Clipper, circling over the moon at a height of about 100 kilometers. They are now firmly docked, and the three astronauts, Conrad and Bean in the lunar module, and of course Dick Gordon in the command module, are going about the various tasks, largely of transferring the many lunar samples, the rock boxes, from the lunar landing craft into the command module. And, of course, they will be coming out of the lunar craft very shortly themselves through that tunnel, what we call the docking tunnel there. That will be shut off, and a short time later, the lunar lander will be jettisoned. That is, it will be sent off on a path to the surface of the moon for another experiment, an impact experiment to see just how that seismometer is operating that they left behind. Now let's go back to the Manned Spacecraft Center at Houston and correspondent Rhett Turner.
I wish I could have given you a humorous and unusual little aside just a moment ago. We certainly will be replaying it for you sometime. Pete just called down to Earth and said, hey, what time is it there, Houston? And Jerry Carr said, it's 9 minutes past high noon here in Houston. And Pete says, gee, I'd completely lost track of whether it was day or night. And Al Bean says, what day is it? Here's Pete calling in again.
Go ahead, Pete.
Well, we were on the back side then, coming around. I don't remember exactly what time it was. Coming up on... Oh, it's a mid-course correction. Up on a mid-course correction, We got an ECS light with a partial pressure CO2, went over 7, and that kind of surprised me. And we did switch the canister secondary, and sure enough, the CO2 gauge went to 0, like it was starting on a fresh canister. I don't think the canister that we put in, which was at 130 hours, that's only 15 hours old, have done that. I'm wondering if maybe I ought to take a look at that canister and see if it's wet or anything.
The carbon dioxide removal system seemed to give him a warning light as he was
Roger,
coming behind the moon.
Stand by. I think we've got some words on that.
This is a lithium hydroxide canister which removes carbon dioxide from the air they're breathing. During the terminal phase, right after one of the small mid-course corrections there, his warning light came on and his CO2 partial pressure went up, he noted.
Take the hatch out.
That's Dick Gordon saying, Pete, he's going to take the hatch out. They're not going to be in the lunar module much longer, but they, of course, are quite interested in the condition of the air breathing system there, so he's going to...
Is that what you said, Dick? We can open the hatch?
Dick said he was going to open his hatch.
They will remove the lunar samples first, will they not, to pass them to Dick Gordon in the command module?
Oh, everything. That they'll spend quite a bit of time in doing this. They're going to doff the helmets and gloves first in the two spacecraft. Well, Dick's already has his off. And then they will begin to unstow, remove the drogue and the probe and all of the connecting mechanisms. And they will spend some time now with this transfer process. There's quite a bit of configuration of suit loops and of spacecraft instruments before they get to the point of starting to pass the rock boxes and all the stuff they're going to bring back to Earth in from the lunar module into the command craft.
Bill Land, what about this scorched nose of the command module that Pete Conrad and Al Bean reported seeing just before they docked? Any theories on that?
Well, I can't really speculate on that now. It could be a number of things. For one thing, there's a protective cover that is over the command module as it goes through the atmosphere, and if there were any burning, I would think that that would take some of the burning first prior to the command module, that is, if it were lightning. I really don't know what it might be, but certainly when the spacecraft gets back to the Earth after reentry, that area of the spacecraft should still... show the signs of whatever they happen to see there now.
They took lots of color pictures of it from the lunar module, so we should have some clear pictorial representations of the area that appeared scorched.
It actually could have happened when the launch escape tower jettisoned.
Mm-hmm. Even the protective cover under that?
Well, the cover goes with it, and it's conceivable that maybe some exhaust from that would cause the markings. I really don't know.
Yeah, we shouldn't jump to conclusions that they're looking at the results of the lightning strike, which many of us think we saw. We should be somewhat reserved in jumping to any such conclusions because the scientists just haven't done their analysis. It isn't consistent with the scientific method to speculate very far ahead on these things. You could be completely wrong by the time they analyze all the data and figure it out scientifically. The cameras on board. We understand also, this is one other somewhat disappointing bit of news here.
And Trumpet Houston, the computer's yours.
Later, I guess. Well, that word from Vision Control to Intrepid that he has control of his computer. Apparently, Al and Pete left one of the color magazines from the Hasselblad camera on the lunar surface.
This magazine. Got a CSM separation maneuver pad for you. And a limb jettison.
This is one of these long series of numbers to the command service module to Dick Gordon, a pad, the timings to be to coordinate the rocket maneuver for limb jettisoning time, and then Dick Gordon will have to copy these down. I was about to say that the color magazine from the Hasselblad camera, the pictures taken in this magazine were apparently the colored pictures of the Surveyor spacecraft on the surface while the astronauts Conrad and Bean were working around the Surveyor. They had trouble with one of the two Hasselblad still cameras and had to continue with one. And apparently somewhere in this process, one of the magazines didn't get put back in the proper stowage container and back
in the ground. Houston, you ready to copy pads?
Intrepid.
Negative, Houston, but we will be in just a minute. I'll give you a call.
Okay.
That's Al Bean. They're going through these procedures of stowing material away and reconfiguring everything inside Intrepid. Safely docked, safely attached to the command module Yankee Clipper. They've doffed their helmets and gloves. Both Bean and Conrad have taken their gloves off. They are now in the process with Dick Gordon on the other side of this docking tunnel complex now, all one long tunnel connected together, opening the hatch, removing and stowing the drogue and the probe on the lunar module side. Dick Gordon removes a hatch on his side. He verifies the docking latches as being firmly secure. Then he collapses a probe and passes it to the command module, the command pilot over in the LEM. By now, at that point, the tunnel is open, and they leave that mechanism over in the LEM. Part of this will stay there, since they won't need the probe again. They won't have to dock again once they disconnect. And then the next procedure is to be configuring the suit loops for vacuuming. That's one of the flight plan items here to come at 146 hours, 5 minutes from now. Gentlemen? Bill Land?
We are here, Rhett. We were listening with fascination. We were thinking ahead, really, to the next 24 hours or so.
27 hours until that return to Earth. I calculated that a minute ago.
And the fact that they are staying in lunar orbit an extra day for bootstrap photography. Why is this, Bill Land? Is it of great value to have this?
Well, it's certainly of great value to be able to record photographically the landing sites that we will attempt to go to on future missions. It's particularly necessary in the case of our next landing site, Fra Mauro, which requires a bit more additional photography in order to assure ourselves that we understand exactly the altitude and position of Fra Mauro, the landing site we're going to, and the areas around it in the event that we, for some reason, would choose to land off of the target point. Right now we have limited photography, but on this mission we're taking added photographs. In fact, I believe they already took some their first day in orbit prior to the landing maneuvers. But in this extra day in orbit, 24 hours or 12 more orbits after they undock or after they jettison the LEM, they will be conducting numerous photographs of three sites, basically, Descartes and Lalande and Fra Mauro, but Fra Mauro is of primary importance because that's where we're going on the next mission. And these photographs will be with a long focal length lens on the Hasselblad camera, which will give them a great deal of high resolution information on that site.
Dick Gordon is calling to Pete.
Pedro, where are you?
Pedro, where are you? Dick says.
I'll apologize for the noise. I was trying to pull out my lunar map here.
Are you giving us a call?
We're getting a lot of noise from the moon.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
Well, actually, Bill Land, Fra Mauro, looking at this map, is not a great distance from the present landing site 7 in the Sea of Storms.
No, it isn't. Now, the distance, of course, is not the factor that we're most interested in. It's a different type of features that we encounter there. It's at a little bit different latitude, but that isn't the important thing.
It's
we're getting
an
interesting
terrain.
Little exchange of conversation here.
Intrepid, we're ready to copy those pads.
Apparently,
Intrepid, the first pad will be a P-30 LEM maneuver. Call it LEM impact or LEM final.
Now, that's some more preparation. I'll recap what was happening before that. Al Bean is apparently ready to copy down this long string of engineering numbers.
Ready to go. Roger, now 3-3.
What happened a moment ago was Dick Gordon called for Pete. He didn't get an answer. And finally, Pete came up and acknowledged that they're having a little trouble in there. What they're obviously doing at this point in following the flight plan is in configuring the suit loop for vacuuming. What this means is that they are preparing the air circulation suit of the space suits, one of these hoses, for vacuuming, actually making one of the hoses into a vacuum cleaner to clean up the dust and lunar material that's floating around and covering things inside the lunar module. In fact, when they start unstowing the bags and boxes they've brought back from the surface of the moon, they are to vacuum them, vacuum and then bag the sample return containers, put the rock boxes in another covering so that this very fine lunar material won't float around all inside the air of the command module when they pass it in. Obviously, Pete is going to check further into this carbon dioxide removal system, the lithium hydroxide canister. He said he might open that up and take a look at it to see if it had gotten wet or something. If one of these air cleaning and purifying systems did get wet, this particular chemical unit, it would cause its efficiency to go down. He switched to an emergency unit or the backup unit, and the carbon dioxide light went out, and the partial pressure, the sensor which measures the amount of carbon dioxide in the air, the sensor showed that the air removal system suddenly was cleaning all of the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. This is no problem. There is no real difficulty. It's just one of those things you want to figure out. There are replacement canisters there on board. Mission Control giving the spacecraft now some instructions to pull the LEM tracking light circuit breaker. Al Bean acknowledged. He apparently has his pad. The figures for his impact maneuver. That's to come when they crash the lunar module and track it into the surface.
Go ahead, Clipper.
Clipper calling in.
I'm ready for those pads.
He's ready for the pads that he's
Roger,
got to
Roger, Dick, would you put your tape recorder forward, switch to forward, please?
We'll hear a long string of numbers again, I suppose, feeding up this pad for
yeah,
the...
Let's see if that's what's coming.
Okay, the first one will be your separation burn pad.
Yeah, that's going to be one of those separation burn pad. That's the first one to come when Dick Gordon's ready to copy.
Separation maneuver follows.
There roll. It follows.
1-8
okay.
Zero.
That's not.
Pitch, three,
that's pretty
four,
technical to listen
three,
to. We've
yaw,
sometimes these last three
zero,
or four minutes.
Zero,
zero.
GET of TIG is.
Norm Guerin,
Bill
you
Lamb, these photographs
zero,
that are going to be
four,
taken the next 27 three, hours, zero, will these be used to make the mock up for the LEM simulator later for training?
Yes, they will. We have sufficient information on Framora now so that for the precise area where we're landing, we could make the mock-up. In fact, they're going ahead with this right now. But these photographs will be of better resolution and of a slightly wider area around Framora, and that will give us more information and provide for a better model. Also, we'll add a strip prior to the Framora landing site such that the model can be built of the entire descent area that they will be sighting when they actually land. This then will be put in the simulator, and when the crew runs through their practice runs, they'll be looking at the same surface or as near as they can get it to what they'll be looking at when they actually make the descent into Framora on the next mission.
Bill Land, what about the other candidate sites? I'm thinking particularly of Lalande and Descartes, or Descartes, however it's pronounced there. Have these been picked yet as landing sites on future Apollo missions, or is this still being decided?
They have been selected, Bill, as candidate sites, and by candidate site I mean that we've made up a list of sites that we want to go to in order of priority. I say we, that's the scientific community that's really done this in conjunction with our own engineering people. Our engineering people provide the scientists with information on how difficult it is to get to the various sites and the order of difficulty, and then the scientists in turn select based upon this the sites that they want to go to, and then there's a certain amount of bargaining that goes on. The scientists, as of about 2 months ago, made up about four lists of sites. So depending upon the difficulty we have with point landing and with bootstrap photography information that we get and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. the various lists will be used. The just where Lalande and Descartes fall on these two lists, I don't recall now, but Lalande isn't too far down, as I recall. To simplify what I just said, the list of candidate sites represent sites that we want to go to, providing that we gain in knowledge as we do in experience with each succeeding mission, then we should be able to go into more and more difficult sites.
Well, Bill, Frau Mauro, as you've mentioned, is the site for the landing site for Apollo 13. And looking at a lunar map, it does seem to be much rougher terrain than the other two landing sites for Apollo 11 and for Apollo 12. Is this correct?
It is considerably rougher, and that's one of the reasons that we need this added photography, so that we have the confidence and the information that we need to make the landing. Being rugged provides more than just the obvious problems. It gives us problems with locating landmarks because of varying sun angles. It takes a rather low sun angle to cast the right kind of shadow that you can see from the angle that you're coming in on the landing, and yet you can't accept a too high a sun angle. It has to be between certain limits, and these limits become more and more constraining with the more rugged sites.
We can tell Rhett Turner that he has 30 seconds before this broadcast comes to a close. Or no, I suppose Rhett is busy now working out some other problems at the Manned Spacecraft Center. But continuing this discussion, we will not continue it. Norm Guerin.
Well, with the successful redocking of Apollo 12's Intrepid, the Voice of America concludes another segment of its coverage of the flight of Apollo 12, man's second visit to the moon. Astronauts Conrad and Bean guided their lunar module to a pinpoint landing in the Sea of Storms at 6 hours 54, GMT, Wednesday. They completed two highly successful moonwalks, gathered lunar samples, deployed research instruments, and have now joined the mothership, Yankee Clipper. The only disappointment was the failure of the color television camera shortly after the beginning of the first EVA. The next major event will come Friday, November 21st, the eighth day of the mission, when the big service propulsion system engine will be fired to send Yankee Clipper and her crew of three toward Earth. The Voice of America will return to the air to cover that event at 20 hours 30 Greenwich Mean Time, Friday, November 21st. At this time, I'd like to thank NASA engineer William Land for helping us today, to Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, and William McCrory with me here in our Washington Apollo News Center. This program has come to you from the United States of America.